It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Your announcer, Zach Caton, and we are coming to you live on tape from Urban Hill in the Post District at 510 South, 300 West. Urban Hill is a fine dining restaurant and part of the Leave Room for Dessert group, which includes Hearth and Hill and Hill's Kitchen in Park City. Our guest today is a co-owner of the group, Brooks Kirchheimer.
The sincerity with which all that was said is undeniable. And
thank you.
Absolutely. That's great.
Thank you. Don't ask the team that works around me.
No,
I'm just
so
kidding.
Sincere,
I hope
sometimes.
I am. Yeah.
And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
Oh. Yeah, I've had them. I think you said some food if we had some, but I figured, you know.
Thank you.
We don't have the full kitchen, but something to snack on. These are, skillet rolls are number one selling item. A little herb butter to go on the side. So feel free to snack.
Thank you.
Indeed. Yeah.
I got Bill's big head on the other camera. I can't.
I'm surprised my big head isn't on both cameras. It's that big.
It is.
You can't insult me. You know that, Jimmy. Brooks, what are these?
These are our skillet rolls, so our number one selling item in the restaurant. They're a side dish. We make them in-house, come with an herb butter. Typically, they'd be served in a skillet. They are an awesome item to enjoy.
So we're at Urban Hill.
Urban Hill in Salt Lake City, brand new. What's the physical address?
510 South 300 West. Mm. So this is building 2 of the Post District project here. The Post District will eventually have 580 apartments here. Traeger Grill's new headquarters will be just right next door to us here. Looking to hopefully finally open this fall. I think they're getting. It's been a long, delayed project for them, but they're getting very close. Mm. And then some other great retail neighbors. We have Levels Crossing Brewing, which are awesome, awesome people that are open. They opened in June. And then also Urban Sailor Coffee have been open. And then there's a couple more on the way.
That voice you're hearing is Brooks Kirchheimer. He's the owner-operator. Would that be
correct? Yeah, co-founder, co-owner with my dad. Lucky to have a father-son business relationship, and so far we're still both alive. So
we
survived.
I saw that nice picture of you, and I guess that's your wife as well on your website.
Correct. Yeah. We have made the safe marital decision to not work together. So
that's a good idea.
I've tried to get her to join the team a couple times, and I think she's the smart one in the relationship to avoid that.
Let's talk about. We're just rolling here. We're at Urban Hill, as we said, and part of the Hearth and Hill Restaurant Group.
Correct.
Talk about that.
Yeah, the official name is Leave Room for Dessert Eateries. That's our restaurant group name, and my dad is the one that came up with that. He's the creative one in that respects, and we wanted something different and unique. My last name is not really advantageous to have for a restaurant group name, Kirchheimer. And so
come on down to Kirchheimer.
Two H's. Yes. I like that. There's two H's.
Yeah,
there.
The German part of it. I grew up in L.A. in a city called La Cañada, and born and raised. And growing up, actually, I was just back home this past weekend, and my parents at all times have 6 to 8 pints of ice cream in our freezer, without a doubt. And so I know I can always, at night when no one's around, get the spoon out and start digging in. It's always a nice treat. I know I'm at home. Whenever we go out to eat, the server comes over, and yes, we will always have dessert.
I think, unfortunately, when I was here and had dinner with my wife, I don't think I left for dessert, and I feel guilty now. I should have done that.
Well, we just came out with a new dessert menu, so hopefully I'll inspire you to join us here very soon.
I will. I will be back. I
Good.
Will be back.
Good.
So let's talk about how you got started, Brooks, in this restaurant business. Your bio says you wanted to be a restaurateur since you were a little kid. Really?
Yeah. I mean, the story goes, when I was about 7, one of the first Christmas presents I can remember asking for, or Hanukkah, my dad's Jewish, my mom's Catholic, was a cash register. And so I could play pretend restaurant with my two sisters, one older, Amy, one younger, Meredith. Mm-hmm. And so they got sucked into pretending to be the guests, as my parents did, and the dog and the cat. And it kind of took off from there. I just love the interaction with people and providing an experience. And I got my first job right before September 11th in La Cunada, where I grew up, at a mom and pop cafe, Penelope's Cafe, that's still in existence. Mm-hmm. Actually, I just stopped by this past weekend. And I was there on and off for about 5 years.
Doing what? Serving
everything.
And everything in
the
restaurant?
I was their first employee hired. And from busing. They didn't have a full kitchen, so did some of the, sandwiches and salads, cooking those, taking orders, just really anything that needed to be done. It was a small, small team. Really
all hands on deck.
Yes, 4 or 5 employees plus the owner. And so that was really a great one. And it's cool when you're 15, you're working with 20, 25, 28-year-olds. So I matured very, very quickly.
Conversations. Learned some new words.
Yes, yeah.
With some new habits.
Yes, drank a couple new things, maybe puffed something.
Yes,
that,
I knew that it was there. I wasn't going to say it. I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
California.
So did you know what you wanted? Did you know what you wanted out of the restaurant business? Or you think, well, maybe I'll be a chef, or maybe I'll be a this, or did you always want to be an operator of a...
Yeah, always front of house is what spoke to me. I think a lot of it for me was the interaction with the people and really just listening to them and wanting to make an experience. You know, growing up, I either wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I'm a huge LA Clippers fan, so I wanted to be the play-by-play guy
and
for them.
You've got a good voice for
Thank
that.
You. Yeah. Thank you. And so I was the sports editor. I went to the University of Denver for hotel, restaurant, tourism management. And I chose that school in part because they had both a broadcasting minor, journalism, as well as a business school that had the hotel, restaurant, tourism management school within it. So I was able to do both. And
perfect
kind of
fit.
Come to the end and... worked all the way through college at the University of Denver in Colorado. And at the end, it was right before the recession in 2008. And so I was lucky that the Montage Hotel Group came out and interviewed a few of us, both from there, then also at Cornell in New York. And then it just so happened myself and someone I went to high school with as well, and then another gentleman I became really good friends with, we went and opened the Montage in Beverly Hills in 2008.
That's sort of ultimately how you got to Utah. Right?
Correct. Yeah, I grew up coming out here skiing. Every year we would come out.
So you're familiar with Utah, Park City, the landscape, in terms of even the restaurants, I'm sure you dipped your toe into while you were out here.
Especially up in Park City. Not as much in Salt Lake. I didn't really become as much familiar with Salt Lake until I moved out here to work at the open the Montage up in Deer Valley. So I was in Beverly Hills, opened that for 2 years. That was quite a learning experience.
I bet.
Especially to answer your question about the operation. I've always been intrigued by cooking, but I've always said I'll leave that to the super talented people. Like here at Urban Hill, our chef Nick Zocco and his team Blake and Levi doing a phenomenal job, and all of our cooks. And, Beverly Hills was big because I had just graduated and the recession was happening. And so here I was making peanuts compared to all the other managers. So I had the safest job in the hotel. But it was also sad at the same time seeing all these people get let go. But it was advantageous for me because then I was put into positions of growth. And it was cool because the Montage was really just blooming. And so we had people from the Dalai Lama, Meryl Streep, Judge Judy would stay there to tape all of her shows. She lives in New York. Jay-Z, Beyonce, Stanley Tucci, you name it. I was at the rooftop restaurant for the first year. And then I think a big kind of aha moment in my career was about a year in, we had this one older couple that would stay at the cabana up on the rooftop, and they would come every day, retired, older. And I'll never forget walking up one day, and they said, "Oh, so you're getting moved to room service?" And I said, "Excuse me?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, we hear that you're being transferred down to room service." Obviously news to me. And it was a big wake-up call. The room service department there in L.A. was majority Hispanic, and growing up in L.A., obviously very familiar and comfortable. And
you speak Spanish?
I do. Not fluently, but enough to get around. And so to come in and manage that team, it was new for me. And it's 24-7. And so it was something that I think was a big helped me mature in my career and understand the challenges that come with it. There was that movie that was filmed, I think probably 7 or 8 years ago, about the poker games that would be played inside the hotels in LA. I mean, we had that. And as being the manager of room service, I was in those rooms. I think it's like Kate's game or Mary, whatever it was. I went into Michael Jordan's, room, saw his red toiletry kit with the Air Jordan logo on it. Went into Jay-Z's room and saw the, Yankees hat with the leather black jacket that are etched in memory, and the Dalai Lama being able to go into his room and serve him at 4 a.m, having to stay in the hotel because of his weird eating times. And so really, I think just adapted me to a whole new world.
And you get to be a sort of a legitimate peeping Tom. Mm-hmm. Look in on people's lives in a certain way that most people don't have the advantage of doing.
Correct. Well, room service, from my experience in hotel and hospitality, casino environment, specifically back east, those room service guys, more like mini butlers.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to know they're asking you for items. You have to be familiar with your beverages, the list, what you can source, cigars. Mm-hmm. So it's absolute sommelier as well as hospitality and things of that nature.
It's pretty wild. I mean, hotels, one day maybe I'll write a book, but it's pretty interesting the things that you hear and see. I mean, one of the stories I love telling is pretty early on there, the ladies of the night happened to make an appearance at the bar.
You mean prostitutes?
Whatever you'd like to call them. And a gentleman came with his Ferrari, and the valet, of course, left it on the front. Mm-hmm. And there was a switch of the PM valet team to the overnight valet team. Well, the communication was not as strong, and the ladies of the night came out, saw the Ferrari sitting there, and said, "Oh, this is our car." The valet didn't think twice, and didn't even know how to start the car. Had to help them start the car, get it going. And you can imagine what that conversation was like with the gentleman when he came to get his car. And I always joke because in the hotels, there's what's called an MOD log, a manager log that gets sent out for any of these incidents. And it said, you know, while the gentleman was waiting, we offered him a bottle of water. And I thought, well, you need a lot more than a bottle of water. This gin and tonic would, you know, hopefully start on the way. And eventually the next morning, the pimp called and said, "The car is running. It's on this street. Come and get it," and hung up the phone.
It was running.
Yeah,
they didn't know how to turn it off.
Hopefully on a good street.
So stories like that are just, you know,
priceless.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Now, okay, let's get into how we make the leap from working for someone, and being an employee. Which, you know, I'm the sort of person I never ever wanted to have my own business. I don't want the headache. I don't want the travails, the problems. I don't want to have to do the taxes or nothing. I want to work for somebody, get a salary, and that's it. You somewhere along the line said, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to start the Hearth and Hill Group. You have the Hearth and Hill Restaurant in Park City.
Yep.
Hill's Kitchen, I think.
Yep.
And then this place, Urban Hill.
Yep.
And perhaps more hills to come.
Yep.
And I come into here and I look at this place. First time I came in and it hit me again. My God, there's a lot of money here.
Yeah.
There's a
gorgeous
it's
space.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's impeccably designed. It's there's so much invested in this. There's so much inventory. There's so much to think of. Why in God's name would anyone want to do this?
Yeah.
Why?
It's a question I ask myself some days, for sure.
Just so overwhelming to me.
Yeah, it is. There are days where it's overwhelming, but at the end of the day, it's so gratifying. And I think, you know, one of the greatest parts is all the team members that you get to work with on a daily basis and watching their growth and how they tackle some of the challenges that we face every day and rooting for them, being their cheerleader and watching people progress, not just with us, but then also those that in our industry we know are studying for something else. And, you know, a lot of those I've worked with are now doctors or lawyers or real estate agents or, you know, whatever they may be. And so it's really proud in those moments because I think that's the coolest thing about the restaurant industry is you literally work with people of all walks of life. People that, you know, literally have been
different stages of their
foster home.
They're not here forever. This is a transition place for them. They're going to move on to other things.
Yeah. And so I'm lucky that, you know, I have a dad that was crazy enough to want to get into this with me. And, you know, my last job working for someone else was with Peter Merriman in Hawaii. I'll give a special shout out right now. They're obviously going through a lot of challenges.
On Maui?
Yeah, worked at the Merrimans on Maui for 2 years. My wife and I lived there from 2015 to 2017.
That must be hard for you.
Yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. I think it's hit me harder than I thought it would. Our old townhome that my wife and I used to own burned down, and a lot of our friends that we worked with, their houses have burned down, and their relatives, you know, some are not still missing or have passed away, and so... Yeah, it's really interesting. I was texting with one of the managers at the restaurant I used to work with last night, and he's just like, yeah, we don't know. I think that's the biggest challenge right now is there's still so much uncertainty. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many more questions than answers.
I'm go back to I was taken by something you said about getting to know the people, different people who pass through here, the different kinds of people. When I ate here with my wife a month ago or so, the service was just impeccable. I mean, it was, but not fussy. You know, it was just spot on. People right there when you needed them. You're not going, hey, where's my server or anything like that. It was just great. All of it was great. The food was great. The service was great. And I was very impressed. And then I come here today and I see just the two guys, and I don't know who they are, bring out these buns here that you...
The skillet rolls, yeah.
Skillet rolls. They came out and they were both just like really happy to do that. And a smile and not a fake thing, just to like... Here you go. I hope you really like these. You can just tell by the look on their face. That must be gratifying to see that.
Yeah. You know, when we first started our company with Hearth and Hill, it'll be 5 years old this December. Funny enough, Urban Hill opened December 15th of 2022, and Hearth and Hill opened December 16th of 2018. So we like those dates. But, you know, we said at the first meeting with our staff was, when you walk into work every day, we want you to be happy. You know, I was lucky enough. I was a general manager of Zoom, Robert Redford's old restaurant on Main Street back in the day. And I was lucky enough to get an offer from another restaurant to go be their GM. And I was trying to decide, do I stay with Zoom? Do I go somewhere else? And my dad said, where do you want to wake up in the morning and be happy to drive to? Mm-hmm. And it was Zoom. So I stuck with Zoom. And that's great advice. Yeah.
Just a simple question that really still leaves it in your lap to answer. But it's a good direction to have.
100%. And that's what we tell our team is that, you know, we're all human. So you're not going to be happy 100% of the time. Things happen, you know, whatever in your personal life or professional life. But our goal is to provide an environment and a culture where you can be happy a strong majority of the time. And we can provide you with all the tools to be successful. You know, we're one of the few independent restaurant groups we believe in Utah that provides full service benefits since day one. So full health insurance benefits to anybody that works over 30 hours. We 401k program with a match after a year of employment, PTO for all of our managers.
That's not typical, is it?
No, it's an extra expense that certainly adds up. Yeah, it adds up. You know, we offer a free family meal to all of our hourly and manager associates every single day to ensure that they're fed. A cash bonus at the end of each year to all of our hourly associates, depending upon how long they've been with us. So the longer they've been with us, the more they get. For us, it's about a culture of appreciation and respect and professionality. I think a lot of things that our industry woke up to during the pandemic, but we strove to accomplish before the pandemic and be different. And we take our independent brand very seriously in our culture and take those that work in it very seriously that don't, you know, we don't want people to damage it or ruin it because we, you know, like this gentleman that you just saw and others, we want them to feel welcomed and happy and respected no matter who they are or where they come from. That's really important to us.
Investing in your people, they'll invest then in their work and be happy. The names, the word hill is in there quite a bit, let's explore that.
No relation to...
There'll be more hills to come?
Yeah, I think we kind of just ran with that. Our initial architect designer that did the Hearth and Hill up in Park City 5 years ago, a firm out of Long Beach, California, came up with the name Hearth and Hill. We liked it. There's a restaurant in LA called Hearth and Hound that we kind of drew some inspiration from.
Yeah.
We like the two names. You know, coincidentally, HH, as you mentioned, Bill, our last name has two H's in it. And so then we kind of, when we were coming up with the names for Hill's Kitchen and Urban Hill, we just stuck with it. You know, it has that identity that people can identify between the different restaurants.
Yeah.
We'll have our first duplicate Hearth and Hill number 2 down here in Sugar House. It was supposed to be open by now. It's where the big fire was last fall in the Sugar Alley building across from the Whole Foods and Barnes & Noble on Highland there. They're rebuilding as we speak. And so we're really excited. We've stayed committed to them. And so Hearth and Hill Sugar House will open hopefully at the end of 2024, if not early 2025. We're committed and excited to have our fourth restaurant. So that will make us 2 in Park City and 2 down here in Salt Lake.
It'll be different from this restaurant, though?
Yeah, so this is Urban Hill, a little bit more elevated dining, fine dining, as we like to say. Urban Hill, wood fire grill, chef-curated menu, dinner only at the moment with brunch on Sundays, looking to expand into lunch in the near future. Where Hearth and Hill in Sugar House will be very similar to the Hearth and Hill we have in Park City.
I got it mixed up in my mind.
Yeah, lunch and dinner, brunch on the weekends, you know, a little bit more casual up there. We have our, you know, burgers and pho and mac and cheese and hummus and birria tacos on the dinner menu, one of my favorites. So a little bit more casual.
Hearth and Hill's rocking. I love it up there in Park City when I'm Park City Food and Wine Festival coming up. You know, all the winemakers are like, where should I go? I'm like, you gotta go to Hearth and Hill because it's just dynamic wine menu up there, a beverage program with Michael. And of course, Bijan, a shout out to him here managing this.
He was terrific when my wife and I ate here.
We're really lucky. I mean, as you mentioned, Mike Fayad, our GM up at Hearth and Hill, extremely talented, knowledgeable. And then Bijan, who many know here in the Salt Lake dining scene, also in the same respect, very knowledgeable, especially in the craft cocktail world.
Well, this is on the beverage side. I'd like to raise a glass to my colleagues there, to Michael Bijan, and of course,
the whole crew.
Of course, to you, bro.
All the hardworking bartenders and servers, busters, dishwashers, cooks, everybody out there that makes it all go around. And I would just add, you know, to the culture piece, I think a lot of it is listening to people. And also something from the service aspect that you mentioned, Bill, that we've really been focused on recently is genuine hospitality. We think that during the pandemic, I'm sure a lot of people can relate. It went through some interesting phases where for the first few months when we were all reopening or doing just grab and go as we were up at Hearth and Hill, people were, you know, writing all these 5-star reviews and, oh my gosh, how can we support you? And then it was like a year after the pandemic, a light switch flipped and it was like, boom. The review started to become a lot tougher.
Yeah.
People became a lot more aggressive in their demeanor or just very blunt in their responses, hiding behind the keyboard, which I think all in the industry can relate to. We would love for you to come talk to us and help you get it. And so our focus here has been just genuine hospitality. How can we not just be order takers, but really provide you with an experience? Because, you know, we don't know what the economy holds ahead. I know we've all been listening to the news and hear different things. And so in our mindset, how can we make it that, you know, all right, you go out to eat now 3 nights a week, but if the economy comes down, maybe you're going to go down to 1.
Yeah.
How do we become that 1, whether it's Hearth and Hill, Hill's Kitchen, or Urban Hill, that you go to on a weekly basis, or at least every other week basis?
Tell me, you must have done, you looked at the Salt Lake scene before you fully committed to this.
Correct.
And looked around and said, what is lacking? What can I bring to the dining scene that's not here? Did you do that? Can you kind of explain that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as Jimmy knows, you know, we're really lucky to have a great dining scene here in Salt Lake City and one that is expanding on a daily, weekly basis. And we're honored to be a part of it, humbled because of a lot of awesome chefs and owners and mixologists that operate in the city here.
It is quite amazing.
Yeah, we're really lucky. And I think there's still a lot of growth to come to get it to where I think we all want it to be, but we're getting there. And have optimism that we're all working hard to, you know, bring in our own concepts or to change up things. But, you know, I think we looked at Salt Lake, obviously, as a big economic area. You know, a lot of growth, a lot of construction, as we all can see right out the window here. And then, you know, secondly, a little bit of growth in the food scene. We wanted to bring, you know, we really didn't know this concept until we signed the lease here. We knew that we wanted to do maybe something more of a steakhouse grill. Didn't really end up being either, you know, more of just kind of the wood fire grill inspired curated menu that Chef Nick, who was with us for over a year before we opened here. We're really lucky to have him out of New Mexico originally and then Las Vegas, and then was up in Park City working for Tupelo team up there, Chef Matt, for about 3+ years. And he's done an amazing job with us.
I saw he worked for Bobby Flay, I think.
In New Mexico, back in
Vegas.
Exactly. But, you know, we think Salt Lake, one of the things, too, that always kind of got on my mind is there's so many chain restaurants here in Salt Lake. You know, great ones that we all like to go to. Ruth's Chris, Fleming's, Capital Grill, Chick-fil-A, you know, all varieties. Fogo de Chao, I think, and Buca de Beppo, and so on and so forth. And we take a lot of pride being an independent restaurant. And I think a lot of the independent restaurants here in Salt Lake should as well. There's so many awesome restaurants here. And I feel bad if I were to mention just a couple, missing out on some others. But they're awesome. And as I said, we're humbled to be a part of with them. But so we were attracted to be an independent restaurant down here to provide a non-corporate chain feel and really authentic, that people could know that they're supporting a Utah-based local company that gives back to the community. During the pandemic, we gave over $20,000 back to the Park City community. And we plan, as we get more and more immersed here in Salt Lake, to, as well as we already have, supported nonprofits and worked at, you know, done food booths at many fundraisers, continue to do the same down here in Salt Lake. And it's really important to us to get back to the community, to know the community, to listen, to understand who the people are that are working with us, around us, visiting us, walking by us. Obviously, there's a lot of challenges that persist in the Salt Lake City. But I think in comparison to a lot of other places in the world and the United States cities, we're pretty lucky to have a beautiful city that has probably the most amazing views of probably any big metropolitan city in the world. Mm-hmm. But also one that is, you know, clean for the most part and organized and, yeah, has some work to go. But I think we'll get there.
Sure. Have you figured out where your where are your people, your customers coming from? There are a lot of people come from out of town, and I would bet you get a good portion of that. They look online and they go, oh, there's, well, that looks good.
Yeah, you know, we're grateful to have a lot of repeat guests already. Obviously, that's goal of every business, right? I think
I'll say, thank you.
80% of your business comes from 20% of your guests. So we've been really lucky to have a lot of strong guests already that have made repeat appearances. We definitely are a great place for birthdays, anniversaries, other special occasions, graduations, you know, work celebrations, etc. Also, though, we roll out a new bar menu, so that random Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, get the brunch on Sundays, very approachable as well. You know, we've reworked a few areas of our price points to be a little bit on the more approachable side for the casual diner that on a Tuesday night just needs a bite to eat, or someone that just landed, you know, and just before they go to the hotel or after they go to the hotel. We're lucky to be right near Grand America, Delta Center.
And this space here, the Post District, is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's getting done.
Yeah,
it's
we're on the earlier side. As my dad always likes to say, it's easy to be number two, three, or four. It's hard to be the first one in the space. And so we were the first retailer in here.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Levels Crossing and Urban Sailor opened almost exactly 7 months after we opened. And we're really happy to have them. But yeah, you face challenges that others don't face as the first one.
You have to do a video to get into the parking.
Yes, exactly.
There's a video on the parking.
Oh,
I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
the whole nine. So we faced a lot of those, you know, burdens and construction fences in places that they shouldn't and workers in places that they shouldn't. But we're getting through it. You learn, you know, become a little bit better for it. Mm-hmm. But no, it's been a lot of fun being down here in Salt Lake City and growing with the area. I mean, I think just right in this whole area, it's going to grow by leaps and bounds
in the
coming years and be a whole different area than what people have expected. And so we're excited by that.
Brooks Karchheimer, we Urban Hill, just one more little bit and then Jimmy's going to do some news. I want to know how just talk about your menu a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the menu's changed since I was here. I was looking at it online today and I think it changed a little bit since I was here before, because I was looking for I had never had bison before. And I took a recommendation from the server and said, why don't you try the bison? And I thought, okay. And oh my God, it was good. It was, and then I looked and I didn't see it on the menu when I looked. So I was disappointed.
Yeah, I think, you know, with this concept, you know, we will change the menu a little bit more than our other restaurants up in Park City. You know, here we're really lucky to have awesome, actually I think I see a possible farmer coming in right now to drop off some produce or honey or eggs or something here. You know, we use a lot of great farmers in the area.
Local stuff.
Yep, Bangor Farms being one that we've been working with for a few years now. And a lot of other, we take pride in that, supporting the local purveyors. Mm-hmm. You know, I think just one quick side note that I didn't even think about until I was listening to my former boss, Peter Merriman, on a Instagram live he did with Helen Hunt last week talking about the Maui fires, is he said, you know, all those restaurants on Main Street in Lahaina that burned down, they all bought from local purveyors. And now those local purveyors in Hawaii, they're going to be impacted from that. So, next week I plan to follow up with some of the purveyors in Hawaii to see if we can possibly have them ship some of the stuff out here that they have overgrown or, you know, seafood or other things that we can take off their hands and run here. But, yeah, the menu here, Chef Nick has done a great job of providing great fresh produce. We fly in. You know, in the wintertime, our scallops will be back from Maine. They're overnighted. You know, we get great mussels and oysters.
Mussels and oysters were great.
Yes. Mm. And then our meat, you know, our filet comes from Creekstone Farms, which is out of Nebraska. and we plan to go visit them this fall. They do an amazing operation out there. We're lucky. And then Wasatch Meats, a local purveyor here as well, we get a lot of our meats from. Great salads, French onion soup will be back this winter. One of my favorites on the menu is the crab ravioli crab coming from Maine.
Oh.
Been one of our best sellers.
Yeah.
Our sea bass as well. The Woodfire Grill, obviously very much involved. And then on the beverage side, I know near and dear to Jimmy's heart, Bijan and the team have done a phenomenal job. The cocktails, you know, as craft as they'll come here in Salt Lake City, the wine list, you know, we're sitting right in front of the wine cellar here. A lot of great labels that Bijan, with a little bit of assistance from our director of operations, Ryan Michelson, have done an awesome job of providing unique labels as well as some familiar names.
How many bottles of wine are we looking at right there?
I think the capacity in there is just over 2,000. I would guess that we're, you know, somewhere in the 60 to 70% capacity range at the moment.
What about 180labels on the wine list?
Exactly. And then some craft beers as well. We have 6 on draft here. And then, you know, we've got some aviation here and always trying to get the local distillery as well. Mm-hmm. On our menu, so we're really lucky to have a great team.
Will the bison be back?
Yes, we will make sure the bison will be roaming here.
Give me a long way around to ask. Yeah. Is bison going to be back?
Yes, absolutely.
Somebody can call me.
Yeah. Yes.
I was just blown away by it.
Thank you.
Do you think our diner, and I don't want to extend this, but do you think our diner in Salt Lake, the landscape of the diner in Utah, local, adventurous? More safe. What Oof. Was like? That's a that's a product to... mix run, yeah. right? Like, what's the top selling?
Yeah.
Entree.
You know, it's interesting. I'll never forget. You know, may she rest in peace, Mary Maloof.
Yeah.
I had a conversation one time up at Hearth and Hill in Park City.
To Mary, by the way.
Yeah, to Mary.
Yeah, a couple of
massive impact to our town here in Salt Lake.
And Glenn, we would have a martini with her former husband.
Glenn.
But I remember, you know, talking to her one time a little while after we opened almost 5 years ago at Hearth and Hill about the palate of Utah.
Mm.
And, you know, she said there's a lot of work to still be done. We had this Korean fried chicken up there at the time that we've brought back and, you know, it has some spice to it. And she's like, this isn't spice, you know, and she's like, oh, people complained about the spice. I'm like, yeah. She's like, yeah, it's Utah. And I think it's, you know, to your question, Jimmy, it's getting better. It's growing. People are evolving. You know, I think that in the last couple of years, obviously a lot of people, because they're cooped up, have been traveling more. So I think that that has really helped people's palates expand and understand different cuisines.
And our demographic has grown.
Yes.
People are moving in here from your former state.
Yeah, of LA, California. Yeah. And we're, you know, getting great restaurants here as well that people can, you know, push the boundaries a little bit. And I always encourage people, you know, I have a 4-year-old son, so always trying to get him. He gets, a gold star if he tries something new. And I think that maybe we should give gold stars to some of the people of Utah that if they try...
It's a punch card. Ooh, you tried something.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if I should try the bison.
Ceviche, you're crazy.
But, yeah, I think, you know, we're getting there. We still have some progress to be made, and I think that that's where some people look at the Salt Lake or Utah dining scene, that they're like, it's not where it should be or where it needs to be. I think we'll get there. It's just going to take a little bit longer, maybe.
Well, with places like Urban Hill, there are opportunities to try new stuff and then just great standard stuff as well.
Thank you.
That's terrific. So, Jimmy, shall we give Brooks a little rest? Do you want to do?
Yeah, we can go into this. I do have a splash of news. We need like a theme song for the splash of news, like a little typewriter or something going about. Splash of news. Two items here. World's best sommelier swaps wine for whiskey. You believe that, Bill? Wine for whiskey.
I thought you were the best world's best sommelier.
Well, I'll tell you, this guy, Raymond Thompsons, who won the ASA, it's an Association of Sommelier International, best sommelier of the world contest earlier this year, has been announced as the new global brand ambassador of the Kraft Irish Whiskey Company. And of his new role, Thompson said, joining the team at the Kraft Irish Whiskey Company is an exciting milestone in my professional career. For me, being a sommelier means perpetual learning and exploring the diverse world of wine, spirits, and other beverages. I watch this competition. I watch it every year. This was done in June. And the ASI competition is in front of thousands. It's in an auditorium, a theater, where it's staggered seating. About 1,200 people in the audience, and the whole stage, 3 4-tops, and you have a bartender, and talk about the Somm mock blind tasting, mock tasting, and so forth live, all with headsets, and they're timed. You have 4 minutes. Get into it. Check it out. I loved it. I was watching it again last night, and my son's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I feel like I'm there. I'm nervous for this guy.
Would you ever do it, Jimmy?
I would love to do it. I would love to do it. One thing
how
that...
how do you get to do it?
Yeah, you have to... there's varying associations that you just have testing, and then you go up. This started, it was down to three candidates to do this stage, the final. And it was whittled down from 68 before that. And to get to that 68, it's just like a big funnel. It's a big funnel of whittling it down. But in terms of a competition like that, I would I love to compete, not against anyone else. It's against myself. That I just love that challenge. But anyways, the sommelier swaps wine for whiskey. I'm going to have to check that whiskey out next time I'm in the UK and then swing over to Ireland. Anyways, next piece of news. This is really exciting. Whistleblower accuses champagne producer of fraud. A major fraud case in Champagne is set to get underway following revelations from a whistleblower that a producer has illegally produced nearly 2 million bottles of bubbly from imported wine and liquor. Ludovine Jeanminger, a former employee of Champagne producer Dieta Chopin, is accusing her former boss of importing wines from the Ardèche, that's a little wine-growing region out west of Burgundy, and even Spain, blending them with spirits and artificially injecting carbon dioxide before bottling and selling the concoction of champagne. It is understood that around 1.8 million bottles of faux champagne were produced in this manner. The Chopin brand covers 22 labels.
But they don't have it here, do they?
Not that I'm aware of. And that's your splash of news.
Yeah. All right. Well, so now we usually end the interview, Brooks, with this game that Jimmy, you explain the game, Jimmy.
So in, this was back in the mid-2000s when I was working with the Michael Mina Restaurant Group. I was a sommelier in one of their facilities back east. It was Sea Blue. At the Brigada,
okay. Yeah,
Sea Blue Restaurant. I was the opening sommelier, worked with Rajpar and all these great people. Unbeknownst to them at the top, on Thursdays, we would either do Dirty Joke Thursday or Flashcard Thursday.
Mm. Well, you didn't tell me about Dirty Joke Thursday. I got a million of them.
Yeah, you would have been a great sommelier.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the Dirty Joke Thursday still would last in today's world?
I don't think so.
Probably. Yeah.
So that's why these are old. In fact, Bijan was subject to Dirty Joke Thursday over at the Copper Onion Restaurant Group when I was running their program over there. More importantly, so these are flashcards that I would introduce because we had Wine Wednesday for the special wine that we're going to feature that week up until the weekend. And so Thursday I had to fill in the gap to not only revisit Wine Wednesday, but Thursday was flashcard Thursday.
All right. So we'll ask the question. I haven't looked at the answers either. So we'll all get to answer.
All right.
We'll start with this is a wine question.
Okay.
We'll do a wine question, then a sex question.
And then a wine
question, and then a sex question.
So this is foreplay.
Yeah. All right, so the wine question would be, which of the following is not a type of sparkling wine? Which of the following is not?
Okay.
Oh, on the heels of our splash of news here.
Yeah, perfect.
Fiasco, that's A. B, Sket. Sket?
Sect.
Sect?
S-E, is it spelled S-E-K-T?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a German sparkling
Sect.
Well, there we go. All right. Well, we're not going with
B. Okay, we know one.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
C, Cava, or B, Cremant.
All right. What was the first one? Let me, because it's the first
Fiasco.
One.
Fiasco.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I was going to say A as well.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. Not what they would tell you in school. I think school was always D, right? But yeah, we'll go with A.
Fiasco is a, that's right. It's a squat straw-covered wine. That doesn't sound good. Oh, straw-covered wine bottle, often found in Italian restaurants.
Like Chianti used to have that encased. That was for shipping purposes originally.
Yeah.
And then
that used to be like my parents would bring home a bottle of wine, and it would be in this wicker kind of thing.
We have the sound effects there? Is that what we have?
Yeah.
That was good.
Let's see.
There we go. All right. Very nice.
You got it right. You got it right.
Way to go, Dawson.
I'm working.
All right, this is the sex question. Carnal culture.
carnal culture.
Yeah. In true or false, in Jewish Talmudic law, oh, your father is Jewish.
Yeah, I know. Here we go. I have the insight here.
In Jewish Talmudic law, sex is legal only when a man and a woman have intercourse through a hole in a sheet.
Oof. I'm going to say false. I don't know.
I think there's this tradition of... I think it's true.
I think it's true also. I think it's Talmudic is very old, you know, old and by... Just let's see what it says. No, it's false.
There we go.
The guy with the Jewish father. Got it. It's a myth. It's a common myth, but it's not true. Jewish law actually encourages sex with no covering between husband and wife as one of the pleasures of marriage. In fact, the Talmud even makes fun of Persians for having sex with their clothes on. You know, those dirty Persians.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So we're doing pretty good. We've got two
more
questions.
Let's get back to the wine question.
Okay, here's a wine question. What is the primary grape used in Chianti? Is it A, Nebbiolo, B, Pinot Grigio, C, Sangiovese, or D, Barbera?
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Jimmy. I think this one might be the school answer of D is always the, is it?
Well, no. So the main grape varietal for Chianti, Sangiovese.
No. Yes.
So Nebbiolo and Barbera were the A and D, right? Nebbiolo and Barbera from the Piedmont.
And the Pinot Grigio is the main grape, and it's the main grape for Pinot Grigio.
Pinot Grigio up in the north in the Veneto.
I had no idea. You are right, Sangiovese.
Yeah, Barolo and Barbaresco are from the main grape varietal Nebbiolo. And
here we
can also have Nebbiolo on its own.
Yeah.
No, give Jimmy.
That's for me, yes.
Wow.
That's good. Yeah.
Give Jimmy the applause.
Yeah. Here you go, Jimmy. Way to go.
No.
I'm curious, Jimmy, real quick, because we've had this conversation. I'm just curious, and this doesn't have to relate to Utah, maybe just across the country or the world.
Sure.
You know, you're a sommelier, but just the value of going through the master court or others, or do you find that it's, you know, someone can just read about it, study it, have an obsession with it or a hobby about it and be just as skilled in
it? Yeah, you got to familiarize yourself with, it's such a broad topic, right? And the best lesson, and I'll give a throw out to my mentor, Perry Hermides, who's still in this market. He's a sommelier. And, I said, Perry, I really want to learn about wine. What's my first step? And he said, geography. I'm like, geography? He's like, yeah, you got to know where places are in the world. You got to know how Spain is associated with Italy versus France versus Turkey versus Greece and things of that nature. And that was the best advice I had ever gotten, because then once I understood the location, then the cultural value comes about. Geography, the weather and all that kind of a thing. And it allows you to then take the information, the mass amount of information, and drop it in to the those drawers of cultures and countries.
All right, final question, a sex question. How many Americans...
Make it quick, Bill.
Well, when it comes to sex, that's the only thing I can do.
Oh, hey, where's the sound effect for that one?
There you go.
There we go.
How many Americans in their 80s have sexual activities at least once a month?
Ooh.
At least once a month. Americans in their 80s. A, 3%, B, 13%, C, 23%, or D, 33%?
D.
What?
I'm just thinking of retirement homes. Like, it's probably D.
B?
No, D. Like the most.
So 33%.
I'm gonna say
have sexual activity. 13
on the low end.
Yeah,
side.
I'm gonna go
yeah.
B. B
yeah,
13.
I'm with Brooke.
I think I'm with Dawson. I think more than you think.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
All right.
I don't want.
All right.
33% at least once a month.
Maybe I'm speaking from personal experience.
23%. So we're all 23%. Yeah. Among seniors, the ladies say that they get less action, 18%, than the gentleman, 27%. And this
hound dogs over there.
Yeah, wow.
This seems to me like they did take this survey at a nursing home. They're also less satisfied. More than one-third of men this age are happy with how often they have sex, compared with only one-quarter of women. That's a shame, according to the 1998 Council on Aging study. Not for lack of interest. As women age, their partners are more likely to be ill, die sooner, or go out with younger women.
Oh.
So we need an updated survey. This is from 98, so we're just 25 years behind, but that's okay.
This reminds me of a Ferrari should be in this for a drive from here.
Yeah. Yes, full circle.
Well, that I think that kind of this has been great.
Thank you.
Brooks Karsheimer. I say that right, don't
Karsheimer.
I? Karsheimer.
Yeah, you can say however.
Karsheimer.
No, thank you for having me here. We're honored. And I just end by saying, you know, huge thanks to our team. You know, we have about 170 associates now, and we're grateful for every single one. You know, I tell a lot of them that this was my dream to have my own restaurant one day, and for them to fulfill it every day. And to hopefully fulfill some of their dreams and their aspirations and to help them achieve their goals in life, personally and professionally. It's something we work hard, tirelessly for every single day. But I'd also like to say thank you to all those in the industry here in Utah and beyond. It's been a challenging last few years, and we've got so many great and talented individuals in our industry. Mm. And we just remind everybody to be kind to one another and to take a moment during those more challenging experiences that maybe a restaurant is short-staffed or the food that you wanted is out, to just take a deep breath and know that we're all human, and hopefully we can go about providing them feedback in a professional and respectful manner that they can learn from, because we all can embrace feedback and get better from it, but also just understand we're all just trying to work hard to make it the best we can be, and so be understanding to that. So, yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the time that you guys coming in here.
I would say, just sitting across from Brooks, that you know, you look at a person and you hear how they talk, and you see the sincerity with which all that was said is undeniable. And
thank you.
I think that's great.
Thank you. Don't ask the man. Don't ask the team that works around me.
No, he's
I'm
not
just
so
kidding.
Sincere
I hope
sometimes.
I am. Yeah.
Brooks Karsheimer, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Urban Hill, what a great place.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, hope to see everybody here soon, and we'll hopefully do this again. Thank you.
All right. Cheers. Till next time.
Cheers. Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow, who is out of PTO. The Let's Go Eat and Drink theme was composed and performed by Doug Wild. I'm Zach Caton. Goodbye and good riddance. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Please come back.